We will dream, but I think we've got more chance of winning the FA Cup than we have reaching the playoffs.
Two games and two one-goal wins, but they come under very different circumstances as Reading grind out a 1-0 win over Rotherham before a dramatic late 4-3 win at Charlton ends our away day hoodoo. We'll look at both wins and examine what Brian McDermott still has to do to get some consistency out of the side, plus, perhaps very quietly, whisper a P-word we've not said in a while. On top of all that, there's a bumper mailbag as rumours swirl around fresh investment in the football club, and we'll talk over all of that and much, much more on the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode number 87. Welcome and thank you very much once again for hitting that download button or that play button, however you listen to us. Thank you very much once again for joining us. And before we get any further, thank you very, very much to those of you who've gone the extra mile, joined that exclusive inner circle and have contributed to our crowdfunding campaign. As you've hopefully heard and as some people have let us know, the sound quality has gone up. Unfortunately, the quality of the presenting hasn't followed suit. But we've tried to make as many improvements as we can. We're still looking to do much, much more and expand not just the podcast, but the website and things of that nature. So if you have got a few little pennies in the jar, donate away. There is a link attached to this episode posting. The laughter you have heard is from my two co-hosts today, starting with Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Yourself?
Good. I'm doing very well. Two wins, you can't really complain, can you?
Absolutely not. And as this is another early start, it's a 5 o'clock start again due to my working commitment. So, made the call to Royal Hoops, unavailable. Dave Handbags Harris, unavailable. Everybody else, unavailable. Who do you call in your time of need, Westy?
There's only one person you can call in your
time
of need.
There's only one person you can call. My dad, Mr. Tony Wimbush, he's back, Wimb Senior.
So that just about tells me all then. I'm the good old standby.
No, you were the first choice, but we tried some others first.
We're all about squad rotation. We're about giving youth a chance. That's here it. On the show.
Yes.
Need a bit of experience for today's show.
Yes, good evening.
Yes, thank you both very much for joining me. I said it's a special occasion because I think I can't think of too many occasions this season where we've had two wins to talk about. Talking about 1 point is usually considered a bit of a bonus, but I said two league wins over Rotherham and Charlton. It doesn't matter, they're both in the bottom three. We'll skirt over that. But we'll come on to those without further ado. Let's hit that recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So, gentlemen, the week started with a 1-0 win over Neil Warnock's Rotherham. Not the greatest of games, I'm sure you'll both agree, but they squeezed out the 3 points. Hal Robson-Kanu grabbing the only goal of the game in the second half. Brian McDermott had, this is our picture, the key quote I've got from here is, over a period of time, we've been coming out on the wrong end of games like these, but we've come out on the right side of the result this evening, which is really, really important. And that just about sums it up, doesn't it, Westy?
It does just about sum it up. I think I was thinking pretty much the same sort of thing. It's been a couple of seasons now where Reading have played in these sort of games and end up either getting a draw, which looked like was on the cards, or getting turned over 1-0. I think more recently, the QPR home game was very similar. Reading had a lot of the ball, and they couldn't grind out a result, and then they give away a soft goal at the end. It's a good sign, I think, that Reading are now starting to grab these games, although it was against Rotherham, before these sort of lower-ranking sides have given trouble. And to get a 1-0 win, I was quite happy with that, even though the game was a bit of a ball fest.
Dad, as we walked up to the ground, we were speculating over the team. Obviously, it was the game after we'd beaten West Brom 3-1 in the Cup, so we didn't expect too many changes. There was one switch with Jan Kermigan starting up front instead of Simon Cox. Ola John coming into the side as well in place of Rackles, who dropped down to the bench. But the formation was the same. 4-1-4-1 against a team in the bottom three. Was it perhaps a little bit too defensive from Brian McDermott?
Well, we've discussed this on many occasions, the power of Ola John coming from the bench. But starting, I'm still one of those people with the jury out. Such an impact player. But it seemed to work. But whether Kernaghan was okay on his own up front, it's far too isolated.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of support, did he, Westy?
No, that's the problem. I think if the wingers don't get close to him, because they are basically playing the strikers when we're attacking, if they don't get close enough to him, he is what he is. He's good on the ball, he's a big, strong lad, but he's never going to frighten anyone over the top. And that's why the wingers, like they did against Charlton a bit later on in the week, if they can get behind the defenders and he can play them sort of balls like he did for Ola John. I think Ola John's a threat. The thing about Ola John, if he has a bad game, he worries teams and that leaves space for other players.
Yeah, I think that's dead true. If you analyse Ola John's game, we all get frustrated when he overkills that last little step over. And we think, put it in, put it in. But when he does do it, he's a match winner.
Yeah, absolutely. And nice to see how Robson Kanu again continue his impressive form. I was talking with Charles on the Podcast Extra on Friday, and he was saying he's a genuine player of the season contender. If you look at his two spells of form in between, obviously he had that unfortunate injury, but if you look at those two spells when he has been fit, it's very hard to pick out a player who's been more consistent. I can't believe I'm actually saying this on this show.
Well, I can't believe I'm going to agree with you on this show. I think he's been fantastic this year, but that's what we said before. He could do this all the time. He just hasn't.
Neil Warnock has mentioned the manager of Rotherham the second time we've seen Colin this season. Tony, five bookings in the first half. Very uncharacteristic of a Neil Warnock side, that.
You have to laugh, don't you? He really is the pantomime guy, isn't he? And what a showing. Some of those were unlucky, but every time they had the ball, they were crunching into tackles and things, and you thought, who's going to get sent off first? And it was a miracle no one got sent off.
No, and yet he had the gall to complain after the game about Reading's tactics and saying they should have had a penalty as well. I have to say, though, I mean, I sit in Y25 about as far away from that penalty instance as I could. You've got a much better view in the North Stand. Do you think Jake Cooper, do you think Neil had a case? Did Jake Cooper bring him Smallwood down?
In my opinion, it was a clear pen.
Yeah?
It was definitely a clear pen.
Ooh.
And the body language you could see at the time from the Reading players, they thought it was a penalty.
Yeah, I think it was a case of when you're down the bottom, nothing really goes for you. And this is another example of that. Oh, again, I think we could go back over the amount of shows we've done over the last six seasons or so. And I think every time you play a Neil Warnock side, especially when they're fighting against relegation, they basically come and try and spoil a match.
Yeah.
And it was no surprise to see him try and do it again. And to be fair to him, it's worked for him down the years, so why wouldn't you carry on doing it?
Yeah, and I noticed they got their first win of the season at the weekend under Neil. They beat Brentford 2-1. Just a couple of other points from the game. You know, the subs change in the match, which is good to see. Brian McDermott often used to win games with his bench in the Championship, and it's happened again. We mentioned Rackles came on, helped set up the goal. You know, he provided that extra bit of forward threat for Kermigan to link up with, and sure enough, it only took a couple of minutes after Nord came off and Rendon scored. So nice to see the subs really making a difference.
We've been lucky this season, to be honest, that we've got some good players on the bench, whereas in previous seasons you've looked and thought no one's really going to make an impact. But yeah, Rackles, again, I think he started the other week and I wasn't impressed with him, but again, he's, at the moment, while he's finding his feet in English football, he certainly looks like a threat off the bench.
Yeah, he does give a spark there, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he does. He's give lively. A spark. You wouldn't say that he's an out-and-out match winner, but definitely gives a spark when he comes in, and his energy is great levels.
Yeah, he's been good off the bench.
Yeah, definitely. And you get a lot more time from the crowd if you put in that effort. You know, you don't have to immediately hit the goal trail, you know, as if maybe you'd sign, you know, like Vidra. Vidra gets a little bit more stick because of his price tag and his reputation. And But again, he got a bit of slack from people because he was running around. He was trying to make things happen. You saw that tackle against Bristol City, and Rackles has started the same way, really charging about. Sometimes, yeah, he's been lacking quality. I thought against West Brom, some of his touches were a bit poor, but he's certainly come on, and we'll go on to the Charlton game in a minute, but great to see him get that first goal. But just before we did move on, just a point that we brought up on the thetarlesden.com, that was Reading's lowest home crowd for 12 years. 13,504. Okay, there were only 271 Rotherham fans, but that is the lowest since we played Preston at home in 2004. Do you think there's anything to be worried about if you were the club's overlords at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I think it might be mainly because there's been a lot of home games recently. Had a good run of home games. And also Arsenal-Barcelona was on the telly. I think that might have had a little bit of something to do with it as well. And let's face it, Reading-Rotherham's not really whetting the appetite of football.
I thought I'd ask you this as well, Dad, because I'm going to out you here. You're not the greatest technical person in the world. So you're not all over social media and Twitter and things like this. So as someone without, you know, necessarily the technical nous of a youngster, let's say, were you aware of all the ticket offers and deals and things going on for the club? You know, £10 tickets in advance and season ticket holders could bring two people free?
I wasn't. No, definitely not.
I didn't
West
know.
Do you?
No, I didn't know either.
No.
And you're more tech savvy than my dad, so that's an even bigger indictment.
Well, we are a bit old school in the fact we still have conversations with people, don't we?
But then years ago when they did the kids for a quid, that used to pack them in.
Yeah.
I can remember us going to the Wigan game many years ago, which they chose for that, Wigan being the lowest of all the league crowds, and the amount of hangers-on with the kids for a quid, but didn't know anything about this one.
No, and that's what quite a few people said on the post. You know, the club were doing a lot to try and encourage more students to try and get more people. I think they branded it TFIT or something along those lines. And I did see quite a few emails and bits on Twitter and things like that, but a lot of people were saying I didn't see anything about it. So certainly very, very, and I've got to give the credit to the club for running deals like that, and they need to do it more often to get those crowds in, but maybe it's something for them to look at, because it doesn't seem that it reached the right people.
Like I said, I just think there's victims of the fact that Arsenal Barcelona was on the telly, and I think a lot of people might have stayed at home and watched that.
Yeah, well, speaking of Arsenal Barcelona, this was a game of that sort of quality at the Valley on Saturday. Well, you know,
not quite.
The offensive quality, maybe. The defensive quality wasn't quite there. Reading win 4-3 at Charlton. All looks so good. We take a very early lead. Jan Kermit grabs his first goal for Reading, ironically against his old club. Then Charlton equalised straight away, thinking, oh, here we go again. But no, Reading rally back, score 2, make it 3-1, and it all seems smooth, plain sailing. Then we get into the second half. Yo-Yo Sanogo scores another 2 to complete his first ever hat-trick in English football. He'd only ever scored 2 goals in English football before that day. And it looks like we're going to get a frustrating draw. But no, that man, Dennis Rackles, pops up with a late, late winner. Did they get out of jail on this one, Westie, or do you think it was the right result?
I spoke to you before we come on air. I said, when they went 3-1 up, I said to my dad, I bet this ends up 3-0. And that's Reading for you. Just when you think they've got it in a bag, they end up chucking someone a lifeline and making a game of it. And they did it here. And you're saying about Rackles, I think that's the best way to announce yourself to a new support, is score last-minute goals in front of the away end. Yeah, they nearly chucked it away. But I think in a balance of play, I think they'd have been a little bit disappointed not to come away with a win.
Yeah, we mentioned Ola John and Jan Kermigan for their role in the goal against Rotherham. The two of them sort of responsible for combining for the first 3 Reading goals. Tony, we're finally sort of seeing now what the Bournemouth fans loved about Jan Kermigan, aren't we?
I think you're right. I think one of the things that we found out from Saturday's game is that you put someone close to him in series of play and he can produce. He loves those flicks. Even leading up to the goal the other night against Rotherham, one of his flicks was instrumental in scoring the goal. And we saw that on Saturday. The third goal, when he put that flick through for Ola John, was superb. But he needs people up with him.
Yeah, he's, as we said, Waste is a lone striker.
Yeah, and the Charlton fans certainly like him. I mean, I see a lot of things being written this week about Kermigan being a prime example of the new regime that they have there, and one of the fans wrote this really long piece. It's really good, actually. And he was saying that the reason they love Jan Kermigan is because they knew what a good player he was, and they see him as a victim of the new regime, and that's why he got so many cheers on the Saturday.
And he came out, there was quotes in Get Reading on the Get Reading website, basically slamming the ownership, and we saw the scenes after the game. Mass protests again by Charlton fans against their ownership. Unfortunately, scenes that hopefully we won't be seeing at Reading, but there is a little bit of worry, but we'll come on to that in news bites.
But that's the thing, just before you move on, is the funny thing is, if you're going to have a protest, you're certainly going to get more people protesting after one of your more famous and best strikers has left the club and then come back and put 2 goals past you.
Absolutely.
Certainly doesn't help, does it?
Especially all the things he said in the press earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with Ola John and Kermigan, both fantastic. 3 really good goals. And Rackles as well was a decent finish as well. But unfortunately, the defence, which had looked so solid before that, you know, 3 championship clean sheets in a row, only the 1 goal conceded against West Brom in the FA Cup. So 1 goal in 4 games, and then all of a sudden it just is awful. Jake Cooper, who's looking really good, just sort of reminded us that he's only just 21 and he's very inexperienced, not his best day at the office. Our player ratings gave him a 4, and it was pretty easy to see why when you looked at the goals.
I think he had a similar game. Was it against Sheffield Wednesday away when he had a bit of a stinker? When he was able to run his games last season or earlier in the season?
Might have been Birmingham. Yeah. He had a very shocker in that 6-0 at Birmingham.
Yeah, he's still got the odd bad game in him. But again, he's still a very, very young player. And I think if you look at him, he's another one who's got all the attributes to be a top centre-back. And he's going to make mistakes. But I think he's got the best person to be alongside him to sort of talk him through them sort of things.
Tony, is that a Reading back 5 that you'd have confidence in if they started next season and you were looking to build a playoff side?
Difficult to say, really. I'm still not convinced about the back 5. I think that if you look at Jake, he's always got a mistake in him. That's probably the youth coming out, and his legs are all over the place like Bambi on ice.
The new Kebe.
His legs are everywhere, and his distribution leaves something to be desired. But if you want a good traditional centre-back that's going to win those aerial battles, if you want someone who's going to get stuck in, he's a great one for the future.
I think he's got a lot of pace as well. I think people, just because he's a big man, they think he's going to be a bit slouchy. But I've seen him have a few runs now, and I've been really impressed with his pace of the play.
Someone commented that, unfortunately, he did look like he had the turning circle of a tanker, which immediately made me think of Alex Pierce.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat I used for him as well. A bus I used.
Yeah, the turning circle of a planet, I think, was my favourite one for Piercy. But they do have a slight similarities. If you look back at some of Pierce's early games under Brendan Rodgers, remember the game at Newcastle, him getting caught out when Reading got beat 3-0, and another unusual hat-trick that day. That was Shola Amiobi. Again, it's what you've got to put up with for young centre-backs.
Yeah, I think also that they asked Pierce to try and play football, and he was never a footballer.
Harsh. Come on.
I think
Did you not see that step over at Doncaster?
I think the Derby fans might agree with me. Oh,
I don't know how, they haven't seen him.
Exactly.
I don't think he's played a game at Pride Park. Sorry, the iPro.
He's only had one for Bristol City.
Yeah, he got the game at the weekend, I think, didn't he? I don't know if he's played since. Right, a couple of other, just a little things to pick up from these couple of games. Oliver Norwood subbed off twice, on both occasions Reading drawing, and Reading go on to win the game. Are you slightly worried about, is this a drop in form in Norwood, or is this something that concerns you a little bit more than that?
No, I'm not concerned about it. I think Norwood, we know what Norwood can do. We know what he's good at, but it depends who's coming on for him. If it's Brackles, Williams, they're different types of players, you know, and if you're trying to get a goal, you know Williams has got a lot of cut and thrust about him, and he will drive a team forward, and you know from now that Brackles has got plenty of energy, and Norwood's just a different player. And I think, okay, if you want to keep the ball and you're winning and it's comfortable, then you keep him on the pitch, and if you're losing, you're chasing the match. You get players on that are going to get forward.
Yeah, the last three games for Molly, I've never seen him displace as many passes.
No, yeah.
Incredible. Even back to when he got man of the match against West Brom. He got man of the match for his two fantastic free kicks. But you look at the rest of his game, and it wasn't the usual Ollie with the fantastic passing. And I think that's been the same the last two or three games. His passing game has not been what it was.
But is that because maybe we expect too much from him? We're so used to such good game that when he dips below those very high standards, we're a bit critical. I know there's one poster in particular who's very defensive of him. And if you look at the passing stats, things that they still hold up very well. But or is that, again, is it the stats that are deceiving and it's just the sideways passes he's getting right?
Yeah, I think he's we know what you get from him. If he does misplace your pass, that's his game, and I think you notice it to a certain extent, whereas others can get away with it and try and do similar balls, and you don't expect them to make them, so you don't make a big point of it. But if you're subbing him off and you're chasing matches, which they have been, you're bringing different sort of players on. So, no, I'd be more concerned if there was another ball player on the bench and he was coming on for him all the time, but they're not. It's just a tactical change of plan. And you might even see him sit out the odd game now and again, because we've got good midfielders, we've got good players.
Well, there's a lot of sideways movement in our midfield, isn't there? There's a lot of sideways movement.
I think when you see Hector and Norwood play together, they try and get in the same positions a lot. Hector wants to take the ball forward and play football, and so does Norwood. And I think sometimes they get in each other's way, whereas Williams is more of a driving midfielder, isn't he?
But of our midfield, we still haven't got that midfield player that's going to play the Simon Osborne killer pass.
No. So few balls going through the middle.
Yeah, and neither of them two, Hector or Norwood, are Sidwell type players where they will burst forward and have a goal-scoring threat. Whereas Williams is sort of like that, is not.
If you can encourage, the crowd encourages Danny Williams to go forward, but he doesn't do it all the time.
No, he doesn't do it all the time, but he's the only one that's different to the other two.
You don't see Ollie charging forward.
No, they want to sit. Then they want to sit and play, Hector and Norwood, and you can't have two people sitting.
Yeah. Although, I think it was against West Brom, we saw that mazy run from Hector, just going all the way down to the corner flag nearly.
No, Hector's a good player. I think that's his best position.
Quietly surprised and very, very impressed with some of his midfield play since he's been in that.
Very, very David Luiz, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I think Hector as a midfielder has been converted to a centre-back rather than the other way around. So I think that's why at centre-back sometimes you see him dwelling on the ball and get caught like he has done.
I think
in
there's
the past.
More to come.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a very good player.
Whether it's quite good enough for Chelsea remains to be seen, but he's still young enough. He's got an opportunity. Brian McDermott came out in the press after the West Brom game and backed him to make an impression for Chelsea. So we'll see if that happens. I wouldn't be too surprised to see him back on loan here next year. But
you wouldn't mind that either, would you, let's face it?
Maybe not.
It depends what role McDermott's going to do next season for Evans as well.
Absolutely. Again, you always want your own players getting the game time if they're good enough or if there's a little bit in it. So we'll see how that one pans out. Dave McCormack had asked about Oliver Norwood. So we'll take that one out of the mailbag because we've got that one ticked off as well. A couple of others that we'll come onto in the mailbag on the game a bit later on, but we'll just finish on this. With Reading now 12th in the Championship, they're 12 points off the playoffs. That P word we've not mentioned in a while. They also have a game in hand as well. Usually you need 70 to 75 points to get into those top six spots. Reading are on 43 at the moment with 13 games to go. So basically they need to win 10 out of the next 13 to really have a good chance. And Nevins has tweeted and asked us, can we / will we make the playoffs? Well, can. Yeah, mathematically it's still on. Will we? Have you, either of you got any faint lingering hopes?
To be honest, I did look at the paper on Sunday for the first time in weeks and think, if we beat Fulham in our game in hand, that's 9 points. When it's less than double figures, should we dream?
I can't see the teams above us losing enough matches for us to catch them up.
I need to lose three to four more than we lose.
It's unlikely, but when you're down to single figures and you're on a good run, well... you can dream.
I'd say that's football fans for you, isn't it? It'll turn them optimists. Absolutely. You know what I mean? When it looks bleak, we can still say it's only 12 points.
That's the best thing about it, though, isn't it? Yeah. And that's why the playoffs are great, because they give you that hope throughout the season. You know, if we had lost either of those games, we wouldn't be sat even daring to mention it. And we'd said a couple of weeks ago the playoff hopes are dead. But it's just that faint little spark. I think the bookmakers have got us between 33-1. And some have got us as low as 10-1. I think that's very, very
harsh.
That is,
yeah, poor.
I think somewhere around, I'd say about the 25-1 mark would be, if I was a bookmaker, and I probably should be given the amount they take off me, gambler. I think that's about right. But yeah.
You can't blame the fans, because if we take 6 points off Fulham and Cardiff are right on their tails in the top, we're all going to dream.
We will dream, but I think we've got more chance of winning the FA Cup than we have reaching the playoffs.
That's an interesting question.
Good double.
Yeah.
Be an amazing double.
Good odds.
We'll be able to upgrade to an even bigger studio if we get that one, though.
That would certainly change your thoughts on the season looking back, wouldn't it? With all this poor season, all of a sudden we won the FA Cup and made the playoffs. We'd have thought, what a great season it was. Yeah.
10 wins out of 13. Brian McDermott's eyes have done it before.
He's done it again.
But it would take a big, big, big effort. But like I say, it gives us something to chase down. It makes those games, especially up until the FA Cup game, mean a little something. Because we were in danger of... especially when you got to that Wolves game. And you don't want games like that. You want something to build on. You want something to get the crowds back as well and get some excitement, get the players motivated. And that just gives them just that little tiny motivation. And all they've got to do... I'm sure Brian will be saying in that dressing room, win the next game.
I'll tell you what I did like to see after the end of that Charlton game, the togetherness of the players. I mean, they all run down to the way and it was all jumping on each other. It was a certainly different feel about it, has been all season.
And that is what Brian McDermott had to say on the game, just to finish up. He said, we know all about their ability, talking about the players. Character was a question mark, but they've shown that resilience to get off the floor. At 3-3, you're thinking, which way is it going?
And
that's exactly what they did.
If you analyse the fixtures to come as well, a simple way of looking at it, all the home games are against a lot of the big teams, but all the away games are against the smaller teams. So with your home crowd and your home record against the big teams, you've got a better chance of picking up points, and you can pick off the small teams at the bottom.
They're actually in a fairly similar position to the one that Brian found himself in during his first season, didn't he, when they took over, because they were about this sort of position then. They went on that incredible sort of run through February, March, and then obviously they didn't make it in the end, but they were giving it a good go. I think we lost at home to Newcastle.
It was right on the last day when Siggy scored those goals. We were still dreaming when we beat Preston, didn't we?
Yeah, I think
we had a sniff.
I think it came down to about the Newcastle game, about three or four games from the end. We played them at home and they beat us 2-1, and that really put the nail in the coffin. But we finished top 10. I think if Reading do get a top 10 finish, I think we'd be pretty happy.
It'd just be nice to finish strong, wouldn't it? Just finish strong and go into next season on a winning run. That'd be all right. I think we could take that and hopefully build on it.
Hmm. It's at times like this that all the fans will be looking at all those last minute goals we've conceded. And there's been a hell of a lot of those goals this year.
Yeah, they don't concede that goal at Sheffield Wednesday against the MK Dons, against Ipswich, right there, 4 points. Suddenly that gap's 8 points with the game in hand.
QPR at home, that sporty last minute.
Yeah, that's another point.
The Birmingham away, Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
All those points we look up at, But all football fans do that.
Yeah, we could all do that. I mean, that Fulham game they threw away was a turning point, wasn't it?
And that's what we're here for. We're here to discuss those points and dream. Anyway, let us know your thoughts if you're daring to mention that P word or if that's just pure fantasy. In the meantime, next season could have a very, very different look for Reading, and we'll tell you why in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So hinted at a couple of times in the recap why Reading fans might be wanting to keep a close eye on Charlton and the struggles they're going through. The reason for that is that there has been rumours swirling around the club, rumours that the club have at the moment refused to deny that there could be outside investment coming into the football club. It comes in the form of Monaco's Russian majority shareholder and president, Dmitry Robolev. That's how I'm going with his name. Once again, you'll note the unprofessional joke of pronunciation that has become a hallmark of this podcast. That's his name, and that's how I'm sticking with it anyway, until he phones me up and tells me otherwise. As mentioned, he is the president of Monaco. That's a French top division side who have done quite well in recent years. He came into the club with them in the second tier, and they've gone on to enjoy Champions League football. So all good there. Apparently, the scheme is designed to boost a footballing network that also includes teams in Portugal and Belgium. The news speculates that he will buy a 20% stake in the club. So he would have some direct influence on the decision-making at the moment. The club is owned by three members of the Thai consortium. One has 50% and the other two have 25%. So I don't know whether he would just be buying into that 50 or whether they'd be creating more shares in it. But either way, how do you feel? What's your initial reaction when you read this?
20% doesn't sound a lot. Depends how much influence he has. But I don't think it's a big risk. The guy, I've done some research on him today, and the guy's got a lot of credibility. He's a big football fan as well, and I think that helps.
Seventh richest man in Russia. I think he's in the top 150 richest people in the world. He's got a value of over 7 billion.
125th, apparently.
Yeah. So he's not Anton playing with somebody else's money. This guy certainly has his own money. Whether he's prepared to spend that, he certainly splashed a lot of cash at Monaco, Westy. They signed people like Radamel Falcao. Not been quite as keen to splash in recent seasons, but certainly showed a little bit of strength, at least in the early days.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Again, I think everyone worries about anyone who comes and invests in a football club, especially with some of the shady characters that's been in the past at other clubs. But like you say, he's a football man. He's already running Monaco. If he's going to buy 20% of the club, we've already got foreign investment. I don't see what difference it makes. I think the only thing that worries fans, they'd change the localisation of the club. You know what I mean? You don't want to start moving towards having a whole foreign team and having no one that you can say he's out of the academy. You don't want to stop that progress, because Reading been good at that over the last...
Well, this is just it. The reports came from French media who speculated that the idea was to create a footballing partnership so Monaco could send younger players over to Reading to get more experience. Now, we've seen the good and the bad of this model. Watford, with their links with Udinese, have done that very well. Players like Matty Vidra,
yep,
for example, have come over and they're doing very well in the Premier League, mid-table Premier League side, so that's good. But as mentioned, Charlton, on the other hand, have an owner who has again been sort of using the club as a partnership and sort of swapping players between there and Belgium, and that's gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Yep. I think it's one of those things, as long as a manager still gets the final say and who starts matches, I think you can't say too much about it. But if all of a sudden you've got three or four players that have come over from French football that are young players and don't know the championship, I think you might see Reading struggle.
You haven't got the power either with 20%.
No.
And when you've got teams like Charlton, you've got 100% owner. You can't do that when you've only got 20%.
But the theory and the worry is that this guy would be the footballing voice, because the ties haven't really hidden the fact they're not football people.
No, I think the ties are here to make money, and they are. So
I think Royal Elm Park is going to net them a very tidy sum.
And we spoke about it last week. I think that the transfer policy of Reading is exactly the same as it's always been.
Yeah.
It's buy cheap and sell expensive, and that's not changed.
No, it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens when we see the full accounts of the Thai group that are due to be published around about October. Up on the thailesson.com, we've got a review of the last 2014-15 accounts of the first season of Thai ownership, and they didn't really differ too much, but we can't really see what's happened to the debt or where that's gone. That report was published in conjunction with Star. Very highly encourage you to go and check that out. Dave Hunt, who you might have read, he does the report every year on the Star website, does some great work and sort of puts it into terms that are easy to follow, and we've followed up on that. So go check that out if you are interested in how the club's sitting financially, or certainly how they were last season anyway. So this one is just a very much watch and see. As mentioned right at the top, Charles contacted the club for comment earlier today and they have refused to comment, but they've also refused to outright deny the story. So there's certainly smoke to this fire.
Yeah, well, that suggests that there is some story in the background.
Yeah, we will very much watch this
space.
I think
the difference is that some of these owners come in there just to make money or for exposure. This guy is just in there for football.
Yeah, it's not as if he needs to come and make money by the sounds of things.
If he's got $7 billion.
Yeah.
He's not going to try and put the price of hot dogs up by 50p. You try and make that extra cash.
He may do, but I'm not sure he's here to make money, which is...
If we see food for a fiver go up to food for a tenner, we'll know we're in trouble.
Yeah. Give me mildew A.
Yeah. No, your combo no longer includes a combo. It's just a single. It's no longer a meal and a drink. Right. That just about wraps up News Bites. Not a lot else to report. Actually, one other point. A loan move was completed this week. Young goalkeeper Stuart Moore, who's been the third choice goalkeeper, on the bench a few times when Al-Habsi and Bond have been injured or unavailable. He has joined Peterborough on an emergency loan for a month. Started straight away, less than 24 hours after joining the club, against Swindon. And unfortunately, they lost 2-1. Although he couldn't do anything about the goals, to be fair to him. One was a cracking free kick and the other one he couldn't get near.
I'll tell you what was nice this week, to see Anderson playing against Manchester United.
Saved a penalty.
He did. I thought he had a particularly way. Ben, he didn't have much in front of him. He did do too bad.
Yeah, then he came up against the wonder kid, Marcus Rashford.
That is a dream start to your career, though, isn't it?
Ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I joked on Twitter, I bet Brian McDermott's just on the phone to a... Gillingham, can I have that Dom Samuel back?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Dom Samuel if he just came back, score some goals.
He maybe would, yeah.
Because, you know, he's a player that could play off Kermigan, but I don't see it happening. I think they'll keep him there, especially with Vidra. Unless Vidra's injury proves a bit more serious. So watch this space. Anyway, that wraps up News Bites. No pub chat this week because we've got a pretty full mailbag. So we'll move straight on to that.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
So a big thank you to everyone who's got in touch with us for the mailbag this week, to at the Tarlestand on Twitter using that hashtag TTE podcast. So those who have emailed thetarlestand@gmail.com, or those of you who have visited and given us a like over at facebook.com/thetarlestand. And once again, big, big, big thank you to those of you who have helped out with the crowdfunding campaign. Right, going on to the tweets then, and a couple of bits of feedback, on the game with Charlton, starting with Chris Hartley, said, did Ola John have a good game? He was at fault for their first, but he made one and scored. Does this mean that we may just have to forgive the weaknesses in the tackle because of the influence of two goals? Are you prepared, gents, to carry the flair of Ola John? You have seen his defensive weaknesses a couple of times. Is that something you're prepared to part with?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said earlier in the show, because he's such a threat, even when he's not playing particularly well, he's going to always frighten defences. And I think we've lacked that sort of winger for quite a while.
Yeah, definitely. He's got that impact capability as well.
I mean, McCleary can do it, but McCleary's good performances begin to get few and far between.
Yeah, not really kicked on ever since he's come back from injury. We've not really seen the best of him.
No, unfortunately.
Cause it's all been bits and pieces, hasn't it?
Yeah, he's not had a sustained run of games where you thought he's played really well. I mean, he's come on now and again and, again, been an impact substitute. But compared to Ola John this season, you think he's far and away in front of him.
Yeah, his McCleary stock value has gone down. And he needs a good run to come back.
Yeah, and there's not many wingers that can defend particularly well anyway. That's why they're wingers.
Mm.
Otherwise, they'd be right or left backs.
Well, there you go. Like Jordan Abita. Exactly. He's gone the other way.
There you go.
Moving on. Andy Walker. Did the fantastic away following on Saturday help the team keep going to the end of the game and get the result? Over 3,000 Reading fans were at the Valley, helped by low ticket price. I think it was a tenner and a fiver for adults and concessions. You saw that away end at the Valley packed out. Certainly some good noise. Bucks Raw, who was there for us, commenting, said it was a cracking atmosphere in the day. Do you think those away followings play a big part?
Yes, definitely. I think when you have big away followings at Reading, I think it always puts fear in your home side because away fans are notoriously louder because that's your hardcore support. I think at any game, if you've got your crowd getting behind the side, it does spur you on. It's a fact.
And fans are like that. When they go away, they automatically sing louder.
Yeah, that's right. I think it does. It always helps to have a good away following, even a good home following. If you get behind the team, then they give you that extra couple of percent more.
And you could see that when we went to Milton Keynes. All the Reading fans were not behind the goal. They were right up in the gods or in the corner. And you could see they were purposely put there to stop the atmosphere.
But it goes to my point that we made when we was on about people sitting where they would like to sit. When you go away, you buy seats with your mates, you know what I mean? And you'll sit together. And that certainly helps the atmosphere.
Or it's an allocated seating so you can go wherever.
That's right. And also, the cheap prices of tickets. I don't know why everyone don't drop their prices and fill the grounds every week. I don't know why they don't.
I can see it a lot more at Championship level where they do need the money more, because most teams in the Championship are making a loss. But for the Premier League, where they're making so much money, absolutely 100% agree. Notorious, speaking of tickets, he says, should we make tickets like that for home games a couple of times a season? Could draw in crowds and new fans. Well, we touched on that. They tried to for the Rotherham game. Now, whether it was just a case of it was just so uninspiring that nothing was going to fill the ground, or like we mentioned, enough people didn't get the message. They're clearly trying, and we heard from Dave from Handbags earlier this season that they are very, very keen to try and engage and get more people in. So I think we will see that a bit more.
But if you do too many of those, that will impinge on season ticket prices.
Yeah, then you have to drop the prices out as well.
And then people say, well, they always do 4, 5, 6 games a year, a quid, or something like that, so we'll just wait for those.
Yeah. I mean, we totally spoke about this before, but the Bundesliga, I mean, the prices are nowhere near as expensive as they are here, and they have full grounds every week, pretty much.
Yeah, I can't disagree with either of you. Cool, getting along very well on this show.
I know, it's a bit of a... Well, see, there we go. For now, anyway.
Yeah, there we go. I'll introduce some controversy later.
Do I qualify for a cup of tea yet?
No, come on, don't get carried away.
He's pushing the limit here.
Don't get carried away.
Have a word.
Yeah, right, you don't get a Tullerston mug just yet.
We've only just started getting Buxton since the crowdfunding.
Yeah, there you go. Going to splash out on water.
It was tap water before that.
Straight, you know, it might still be tap water. I'm not going to confirm nor deny those reports.
Well, mine was warm.
If Buxton, if you're listening, Buxton, and want to supply and become a preferred bottled water supplier to the Tile SM podcast, we are prepared to listen.
Have we got to say there are other mineral companies out there? Mineral water companies.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Well, we're not the BBC, we don't mind.
No, so we're
I also said as well about the Monaco owner. If he wants to invite, podcasts of all his various clubs over to Monaco, as a bonding exercise, we can be bought. We can 100% be bought.
Easily and cheaply as well.
He's still paying off his wife, though.
Just a trip to Monaco, I'll do it. That'll do.
Yeah. Even, just sitting this in front of a TV for the Monaco Grand Prix, you'll probably get us half the way there.
At least.
Moving on to Royalty Points, who says, one thing that seems to be returning under Brian McDermott is team spirit. Two ugly wins in different ways, but both showed resilience. I think we covered that one. Math says, can't wait to see Kermigan with another six to eight games under his belt. Him and Rackles or Vidra could be a decent partnership.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could be, yeah. Definitely.
If we get someone to play up with him, I think that's good. But if you look at the Rotherham game, they were so isolated, the two wingers. Both played quite well.
Do you go... interesting, though, I suppose we'll come on to this when we talk about the Fulham game, but more generally for the rest of the season, do you play Rackles over Vidra now? Now that we're sort of two... Well, he's possibly only got, 12 games left, 13 games left of the season?
I think he might, because I don't think there's much chance that Vidra's going to be here next season. He can play in the FA Cup and Kerbigan can't, so you think Vidra's going to start their matches. But if he gets to the stage where he doesn't think he's going to make the playoffs, then there's not real much point in playing Vidra anyway. Mm. If you're not going to make it, you might as well sort of look towards next season.
Yeah, I agree. Depends what formation he wants to do up front.
Yeah, that's the only other thing. If he's going to play with two wingers, sort of makeshift strikers when we're attacking them.
In an ideal world, we play with HRK on one side, Ola John on the other, and Rackles and Kermigan through the middle.
Yeah, unfortunately though, Hal Robson, Canoe and Ola John, both probably not going to be there. We did have another tweet as well, which hasn't made my little show plan there, but I do remember it coming in from someone asking, do you think that we will have any chance of signing Ola John in the summer? Now, he's on big money at Benfica. He was a signing for, he was a nine, I've said this all the time, I always say this nine-figure signing. What I mean is he was about a £9 million signing. 9 million euro anyway, so I don't think Reading are going to get him on the cheap. Would you be prepared to splash out the big bucks on him? If, say, they said, 4.5 million for him, break your transfer record?
I think, like we said, his age is only 23. I think there's more to come from him. I know he's been a bit hit and miss at some of the bigger clubs, and a lot of them have held out the hope that he's going to kick on. He doesn't seem to have done. I think you'd struggle to get a potential better winger in this division than him, and 4 million is not a lot of money for a footballer nowadays.
Oh yeah. Yes, I think he'd be a great buy. Definitely worth pushing the boat out.
So you'd be happy for him to be our record signing?
Well, put it this way. If it's around about £3 to £4 million and we get the new guy in, there's his baptism.
Yeah. I don't see what... Like I say, £4 million's not a lot of money now for a footballer in today's market anyway. And for a player that has still got potential to be better at the age he is, then why not?
Mm, the only danger, said, the better he plays between now and the summer, the more his price is going to go. I think before the sort of last three or four games, you probably would have got him on the cheap.
Do you know what happened? If they were to get to the semi-final, they'd probably have an absolute blinder and then they'd end up in the Premier League somewhere, you know, Everton or something like that.
Swansea, something like that. Yeah. Swansea's how Robson Kanu falls through to get Ola John.
Mind you, asked Derby about Blackman.
Yeah, still not scored there.
Well, he had two stinking seasons for us as well, so he's got at least two to get out of him.
I think he's now got, including his time at Reading, he's now got two goals in his last 23 games. So that humble pie we were chowing down on a little bit earlier in the season. Glad that we didn't take it all out of the fridge.
That's it. For the money they got from him and his contract running out, and like I say, he has had two stinking seasons before, and I don't think Reading are complaining too much.
No.
I do think, though, that Derby can stop signing players from us. That's two they've had now that have turned out not so good.
Yeah, at least they didn't pay for one of them.
No.
But, oh well. Alex makes another point about the atmosphere. He says, we get 3,000 fans standing and chanting for an away game. Why can we never replicate this at home? It's just football. That's just football, isn't it?
Yeah.
Always is. As you said, Westy, with allocated seating and things like that, it's just hard.
Mm-hmm. It's just harder to get an atmosphere going.
But there again, if you give the fans something to shout about.
Yeah.
And we've not had a lot to shout about. You'd see some of the atmosphere once we equalised against West Brom.
Yep.
The roof nearly came off at one point.
Well, I think there's been two games that I can remember off the top of my head, and they've been when there's been big games, there's been a great atmosphere. And that was Wigan in the playoffs some years ago.
Yeah.
And even Bradford in the quarterfinals last year, I thought the crowd really got behind them for the first 25 minutes or so. And Reading blew them away, didn't they, to start with?
And the Forest game, we won promotion.
Yep.
Big night, big atmosphere as well. Mm. And yes.
I think you'll find it against Crystal Palace this week because they're filled air end. I think it'd be a great atmosphere on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed. I should have mentioned that in News Bites. Yes, if you have missed the news, Reading's FA Cup quarterfinal will be on a Friday night, a week Friday as we record this, live on the BBC. So good chance to get down and see the game. And finally, in the, penultimately, should I say, in the mobile, because we have got an email, the final tweet comes from Chris Baker, who says, should we be worried that we can't be both attacking and solid defensively at the same time? Or did the players lose their heads and it was a one-off?
Good question.
That's a good question. Do you want to answer it?
I have to find out Brian for this one.
Well, it's quite ironic, isn't it? We've had three or four really good defensive games and very poor attacking games. And then suddenly it's role reversal on Saturday.
I'd rather have 4-3s though, wouldn't you, 0-0?
Yeah, why not? Why not? There's not much on the line.
I think we all remember the Newcastle, Kevin Keegan's Newcastle, where they didn't bother defending, they just went forward all the time, and everyone used to love that. So yeah, I'd rather have that, I think.
One thing that has been noticeable though, that we had during our purple period up to the Fulham game, ironically, was that we were starting games really quickly.
Yeah.
And on Saturday was the first time that we've really got off to a really good quick start for a long time.
Yeah, there was a theme of games around about that time where Reading were just blowing teams away early.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it died a death.
And then we were playing catch up after the Fulham game in so many games.
Yeah.
But nice to see a bit of character. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. Right. And just to finish off the mailbag, this is a bit of feedback from last week's show. Now, Westy, you might remember last week we were talking about this, about Reading picking up
players. Yeah.
Players. And we had a question in from Tom about, are the club doing enough to bring in local players and get enough local players through the team? Now, Tom's responded to the comments last week, which is something we very much welcome. If you do hear something from us on the show, we very much encourage you to get back in touch. We don't want this to be sort of, you know, we have our say and then it's done. We like the fact the conversation goes on. And Tom's cleared up some of the points he brought last week. Again, I encourage you to go and listen to that bit of the mailbag if you do want to refresh yourself. But as I said, here's what he's come back with this week. He says, I feel that I might have been unhelpfully cryptic in what I said before. It was not my intent to give the impression that the club should be wholly Reading-centric when it comes to their choice of players. Looking at the talent in the first team currently on display at the club, only a minority are from our academy. Although I accept we do bring some talent through it, what I wanted to highlight was a wealth of talent who are playing for teams who do not receive attention from scouts. I don't believe the club is doing enough to harness genuine talent in this town. From my own experience, if genuine interest and passion is shown by a potential recruit and they contact the club directly, respect. This is not welcome and is not acted upon. The club should invite the potential recruit in and assess their talent. I genuinely believe that the club is ignoring a significant pool of quality. I feel it is particularly relevant in the 18 to 21 age group. We should not lose sight of the fact that John Medeski set up the academy to recognise and promote the raw football talent in this town. And he goes on to sort of clarify sort of what levels he wants to see scouting and interaction done with. And he says, I believe scouts should not just be going to watch non-league and lower tier games. I believe they should also be looking at schools and colleges more, building an infrastructure along with the club. Say a new college to Reading or UTC Reading, talent will be found indefinitely. Schools and colleges in Reading and surrounding areas just do not get a look in. We hear about the Forest School a lot, which was a school of Jake Cooper and Gabriel Osho, but not many others at all. Now, I'll start this response by saying I can't really comment on how in-depth. I mean, I can only go by Tom's word here and say if they haven't got links. What I do sort of see is that I do know the club's putting soccer schools, but Westy, you're in a much better position to comment this with kids going through school at the moment. Do you think that they do enough with schools, and should they even be doing enough with schools?
I think they do a great job. But again, he's looking at 18 to 21. So from Reading's point of view, and I don't know this, I suppose at the age of 18, 21, they'd be thinking, well, they should have been made it or near enough making it by then. Or a lot of them at 21 anyway are probably not good enough, to be fair. I don't know how old Tom is. I don't know if he's got some personal beef here, because it sounds a little bit like he has. But I know about the younger section of Reading players, and there is a pool of talent in that academy that is fantastic. But we all know that it's not all about how good you are. It's also about your attitude and your work ethic. And all the players we've ever spoke to, and you've interviewed them as well now, all of them in general have said to me, I wasn't the best player, but I wanted to be a footballer. And I think that is why they make it, certain players, and others don't.
Yeah, we all assume that the club have got these links with schools, etc. And I know many, many years ago, they used to ask people to be put forward. But you can only assume that that's their normal scheme.
I know from when I was at school, they used to, when I was at primary school anyway, that they used to say four or five boys who were the best players at the school, and then we used to go for a trial down at Wilson Road every year. And I always thought that was a ridiculous system, because it was two or three games. You was chucked together a load of players you didn't know. They had one look at you, and then they picked like two players out of that.
Sounds like university trials.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous system. David Downs used to do it, and that was about it. And now I think they get more than enough opportunity to show that they're good enough. And the training that the young players receive for no money at all is fantastic, out of this world. And I think everyone now, whereas different from when I was younger, everyone now is given the opportunity. And if you haven't made it by 18-21, chances are you ain't good enough to play that.
And that's unfortunately my sort of look at this, and the bit that stood out from the email to me. That 18-21, they're saying all the sort of modern coaching techniques and now saying you need to get someone. If you want to see the very, very best from a player, you need them in before the age of 10. I think they're saying something like 8 is now the ideal to get them in.
My son has been there since he was, he's just gone 7, so he's coming up, he's nine, coming up for 9 now. But he's been there a good year now. And I mean, some of them are younger. I mean, there's players there that are 5, and the skill these young players have got is unbelievable. One kid in particular, he's 6 years old, he's playing 3 years up. And although he's not got the strength, his ability on the ball is out of this world.
Can you give me his name so I can sign him a football manager?
I can't remember his name.
Get him in my youth setup.
Can't remember his name, but he's a tiny little fella, but his skill on the ball is unbelievable.
Yeah. And as you said, by the time you're 18 to 21, you've got to be kind of, that's the sort of time that they're given professional contracts.
Yeah.
And the thought of someone handing out a professional deal to someone who's come straight out of a school or a college, it's harder to understand. But we brought this up last week. If you're talking about getting into a championship squad, you're talking about being in amongst the, did the loose math, it was something along the lines of best 1,000 players in this country.
Yeah, and if you haven't been recognised by 18-21, then you're clearly not. There'll always be the late developer. There'll always be the player at 23, 24, it's 40 goals in the non-league, and then they get bought by someone and they can do it. But that is rare nowadays, and I think if you've not made it by 18-21, the scouting network of these big clubs, and even clubs like Reading now, I think you're never going to make it.
There's always going to be some that slip through the net, and we've seen those over the years. And you look at the academy side that did so well a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, how many of those are still playing?
Yeah, some of them are still in the system, some of them have been released. I know people like Neil Webb's sons, Josh was in the academy,
yep.
Didn't make it. We saw the tale of Scott Davis and he played senior football. How his career?
From my year group at Reading, I was a decent footballer. The only person that made it was Neville Roach. That was the only player that ever got anywhere near the first team. I know he played a couple of times and went off to Australia. And the other player that was at my school was Dion Burton, who obviously was a £1 million signing for Portsmouth. But other than that, and they were some great players. But they were better players than them. But they just didn't have the right attitude.
Well, years ago, I remember Osgood. He was in the...
Peter.
Yeah, he was in the Reading youth side. And also, only a few years ago, we said it with Charlie Austin as well. He was on the Reading books as a youth, and look what he's gone on to.
He was bombed out of the... Well, he wasn't bombed out of the academy. I think that he was sort of told that we're going with Simon Church on this one.
Yeah.
So, but he showed the perfect path, and this is what I would say to Tom. Again, I don't know if Tom's talking from a personal experience. I know you sort of made that jump, Westy, but I can't say if it is him or not, because he's not sort of said. He sort of says from personal experience, whether it's him or a friend, I don't know. But all I'd say to anyone at that sort of age is, do what Charlie Austin did. Now, Charlie, as you said, released from the Reading Academy. He went to Thatcham, went to Hungerford, Poole. Then ended up at Poole, then got spotted and played for Swindon. We all know what happened from there. Yep. Burnley, QPR, playing in the Premier League, scoring at Old Trafford, Southampton. So, and we've seen it, and Reading have done it as well. Just this season, they've signed Rowan Lobbed, who's come from Billericay.
Yep.
And Michael Antonio, who scored again at this weekend. He signed from Tooting and Mitcham. Kevin Doyle and Shane Long, punts from Cork City. Like you mentioned, there's late developers, but even those players, though, were playing at a decent level.
Yeah.
And there is a massive, massive difference between playing 8th, 9th tier football and being really good at a school level.
Do you know what? It's not even comparable, because even if you sat and watched Arsenal versus Barcelona today, it is a different football. Barcelona play a football that you would never see at Madeira Stadium. It is unbelievable. It's not even like the same game they play. It's completely different. And that is a big jump. You imagine Barcelona coming down and playing Reading, they would annihilate them. Yeah. And really, parable, they're international footballers. They're all international footballers. But there's a big jump between Welsh international football, unless you're Bale,
I think there is a gap. Because some of these, if they are late developers and they're scoring goals for fun, say, for instance, 18 and 19 for local clubs, I think that you could pick up one or two from that.
Yeah,
way.
Yeah, you could do, yeah. There's a path there, but I think, in general, that is one in a million.
But we're talking about, and again, it's about resources, isn't it? I'm sure if the club in an ideal world would have a scout to be able to go to every school, to go to every local club, but they just don't, because like you say, the odds... It's like buying a lottery ticket and hoping that's going to sustain your living.
Yeah. And the numbers game at 18 and 19 of those players coming through is probably...
And how are you going to see it? You know, the chances, you know, you got one game, 90 minutes from a pitch side angle to try and spot someone. It's so difficult. Now, there's always going to be, like you say, people that slip through the net. And I'm sure there have been players that, had they had the right nurturement, had they been spotted at that school, given that trial when they really wanted it, maybe they could have made it. But the club are doing a pretty good job with the academy as it is. I very much agree. They should be having good partnerships with schools. And I think it's part of the community aspect.
To be fair to them, they have good partnerships with local clubs, like boys' clubs. You know what I mean? I mean, my boy plays for Westwood Wanderers, and there's always a scout around watching all the teams. And I'm sure that rolls out to Newbury and all the other surrounding areas.
Yeah, with the Tornadoes in Thatcham as well.
I mean, they're more than aware of the decent players in the leagues. Yeah.
Anyway, we won't spend any longer. Tom, I said, Jen, I know we've sort of been disagreeing sort of as a group from our own sort of standpoints, but it's just a point of view, just a perspective. And we're very much happy to invite other people on. If you've got experience in the local area, if you think that either the club's doing a good job, or you don't think it's doing a good job, get in touch, because that's the only way that we'll get more sort of informed on the subject.
Well, whilst you've got a manager of Reading Football Club that was a bona fide scout, you've got a guy at the top, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, he was there watching my son. Well, not particularly watching my son, but watching the under-9s and under-10s the other week. So if that's not giving opportunity for youth, then I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and he did travel to watch the under-18s in the FA Youth Cup, who sadly lost at Chelsea 2-1 on Friday. So, but commiserations to them. Again, a fantastic cup run to get to the quarterfinals twice in 3 years.
Again, it just goes to show that the youth is doing pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway, as I said, thank you very much to everyone who has got in touch. The email address is thetarlesend@gmail.com. It is thetarlesend @thetarlesend on Twitter. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/thetarlesend. Very much welcome your feedback on that topic on youth development and all of the other topics mentioned. Anything else, if you've got a pub chat topic, if you want to get involved with the site. Again, we've had a couple of debutants on the Tarlesend this week. Roger Titchford, you might have heard, former head of Star. He wrote a nice piece on Alan Pardew this week. And we've had another debutant write on Chris Gunter's situation. So we're always after, you hear the sting on this show, we're by the fans, for the fans. And that's not going to change anytime soon.
But what is going to change is the segment, because we're going to move on now to have a look at any other business, including looking ahead to that Fulham game.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
So next up on the Championship Roadshow, it's another home game. It is Fulham that come to the Madejski Stadium. A team probably not on Steve Clarke's Christmas card list anymore after what he's done to him this season. Fulham come into the game 20th in the Championship table. They've got 36 points. They are seven clear of the bottom three at the moment. Not in great form. They've only won two out of their last 10, although one of those was a significant victory away at a team in hoops. They thrashed QPR 3-0 a couple of weeks ago. But looking at that team, and again from seeing them earlier this season, you know, Reading were taking them apart quite comfortably 50 minutes and then it all went horribly wrong. They lost 4-2, as we all know. But again, looking at the team on paper, it's nothing to be scared of, and Reading should be targeting 3 points from this.
Definitely, they should be targeting 3 points, especially at home. But Fulham, in general, over the last, well, pretty much all season, have been good for a goal. They're a good bet on goals, I know that, gambler aware. But yeah, they are always a good bet for a goal, but they do concede an awful lot of goals as well.
It's normally the Dembele and McCormack show.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're on form, they could give you a...
If you can stop those two players, you'll get the points.
Yeah. I think otherwise you look at them as sort of an ageing, a lot of ageing players.
Got a bit of experience with Chris Baird and Scott Parker in that midfield. Bit of nous.
Yeah, but they're not going to pull up any trees anymore, are they? They're steady, no. But...
And Stearman's legs have gone.
Yeah, I noticed he got sent off in their last game against Middlesbrough, so presumably he's suspended for that one. Yeah.
It's McCall, mate, you've got to watch. If you can quieten him down, then I think you've got half a chance of beating him quite comfortably.
Yeah, well, not much more to say about that, other than to do the prediction league. Now, Westy, you've had a cracking week.
Have I?
Yeah, you predicted a 1-0 win over Rotherham.
Yeah, see into the future now, I've got an almanac.
And then you predicted a win at Charlton. So you were the highest performer of the week, to the point where you're now just 2 points behind me and Johnny for second place.
Turned it round.
Yeah, you are. Handbags at the bottom on 10 points. Then it's yourself on 16, me and Johnny on 18. And Charles Watts, unlike Arsenal, is only strengthening his position in the top. Sorry, Charles. He's moved on to 26 points. He got both results correct, not the score lines from the two games. So, given your recent form, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, I'm going to go. I think Reading will concede. I think Fulham will score. So, let's go 2-1 Reading.
2-1. I'm going to go for a 1-0. And I'll get the other predictions. But Dad, as a special guest prediction, 1-0 as well.
Like father, like son.
I will say that my dad did go into the Wolves game saying, I had a dream. We're going to win this 4-0. I want you to put some money down on this for
me. Was it like the Martin Luther King speech? Yeah. I have a dream.
Can I remind you of Reading 2, Arsenal 5?
Yeah, he said to me, before the 5-2 Premier League game, he said, go 5-2 Arsenal, because I said, I'll put a bet on for you. And I was like, 5-2? Anyway, got up there, and on the little score sheet thing, I don't think 5-2 was an option.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I'm not going to go and ask for it. You know, it's never going to happen.
Uh-oh.
And then, sure enough, 5-2. So I was like, oh, didn't offer it.
Isn't that always written in the stars, though, when it happens? When they say, nah, that's never going to happen, you can guarantee that's exactly what's going to happen.
I walked out the ground with a grin, expecting some money to be put into my palm.
And I did. I gave you your stake back.
About that bet, Dad.
Yeah, there you go. So, oh well.
Or is this an elaborate cover? Maybe he did put a bet on and still give you your stake back.
You've seen my house, Westy. You've seen the studio.
Yeah, the secret location.
The secret location, Tarlhurst End Towers. So you know that's not the case. All this lovely new equipment's come from our generous listeners. So thank you again. Get that third plug of the day in, so... Can't go wrong. Right, that just about wraps up this week's show. So thank you very, very much. Good mailbag this week, I thought. Good diverse range of questions. It's what we always appreciate. Again, it's by the fans, for the fans. So we very much encourage you to send your feedback in. We will have some interesting interviews coming up over the next few weeks. I can announce that on Thursday, I will be speaking to Joel Hufford, who you might remember as BBC Radio Berkshire commentator. He was Tim Deller before Tim Deller.
Oh,
He covered the club from 98 to 2007, so he was there for all of the Pardew years and up to that fantastic and including that 2005-06 season and the first year in the Premiership. So fascinating to see, get some insight into how the club changed during those years.
I bet he's got some good stories as well. I'm sure he will have.
Yeah, so I will be speaking to him on Thursday. As for when that interview is actually going to go out, not entirely sure. Sort of going to work it out. We've got an interview with Ibrahim Asonko in the can as well. That's slated to go up during the international break. And as well, next Thursday, I'll be speaking to Stuart Lovell. So get a bit of Archie, yeah. Slowly working my way through the team of 95.
I bet you Archie's waiting for the old penalty conversation.
Oh, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to bring that one up.
Bring up the Wolves.
I'm going to bring out all the good things. And then the sandwich.
Yeah, you've got to slide that in at the end.
The important thing is here, if you've got questions for either Joel or Archie, please let us know. If you can, send us an email because it's easier for me to find, given that there's a few days to find. Or if you use the hashtags TTE Ask Joel or TTE Ask Lovell rather than Archie. If you use either of those two hashtags, again, that'll help me. But if you have got the 5 seconds to send the email, that'll be make sure and just put in the topic line question for Archie or question for Joel. Anything you like, we'll be putting the questions to him in advance. So,
and don't write penalty on any of these questions.
Well, you can ask Joel Hufford about a penalty.
Yeah, you can ask Joel Hufford.
I'm sure Joel doesn't mind talking about penalties. But yes, so thank you very much, those two. I said things like that are always subject to late change, so if they don't materialise, then I do apologise for getting your hopes up.
I think it's just Archie Lovell. It's such a shame that that penalty defined his whole Reading career, really, because that's all that anyone remembers. But Stuart Lovell was a fantastic striker. He's a really good footballer.
I was remembering for the Wolves goals.
Yeah, he scored some great goals for Reading. Yeah, he really was a good player. But it's like anything, you always get remembered for the worst thing you do, and unfortunately...
He played a big part in the run-up to Wembley.
Yeah, he was amazing all season.
And the season before with Quinney. Yeah, got 20-odd goals.
Yeah, he was an amazing player.
I think did he get into PFA Team of the Year as well, alongside Quinney?
Don't remember.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, we've got a lot of players in that team. Anyway, we'll be speaking to Stuart in just over a week's time, all being well, and Joel next week. And we've already got the interview with Superman, with Sonks in the can, so that's definitely coming up. But yeah, please get those questions in. Because we want to get all those questions answered. I do my best to try and actually do some research for once and get as many good questions to them. But always helps jog my memory. I'm sure Dave will be straight on this with some good insights and memories for me to bring up.
The knowledge should be on it.
Indeed, yeah. And hopefully we'll have him back on this show because, done with you two now. I've had enough.
Do I get my cup of tea yet?
No, absolutely not. No, in all seriousness, thank you both very much for joining me. Thank you to everyone who has downloaded and listened again. Fingers crossed, we're talking about another win when we come back, probably next Monday again, maybe Tuesday. And then we'll be building up to that big, big FA Cup quarterfinal against Palace. So join us again there. Hopefully, I'll also talk to Charles on Friday before that Fulham game. But watch the Twitter feed. In the meantime, nothing more to say. Come on, you answer. It's Fantasy Football
social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.